It's Wednesday, September 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hi, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the Iran nuclear deal appears to clear a hurdle in the U.S. Congress.
Since he was the leading candidate who was not associated with the old way of doing politics, he received a decent amount of support.
Politics in Guatemala is no laughing matter, or is it? Also ahead, Force Friday energizes Star Wars fans, and there's new music from a Dutch-born pop singer. It's all on today's International Edition. Democrats in the U.S. Senate have rallied 41 votes. That's enough to block a resolution opposing the Iran nuclear agreement. And this means President Barack Obama will not have to veto such a measure, a significant political victory for him. The United States and five other world powers reached the agreement with Iran in July. The deal would curb Tehran's nuclear program in return for an easing of sanctions that have hobbled the Iranian economy. Cindy Sain covers Capitol Hill for VOA and now joins us. Cindy, it appears congressional support for President Obama on this issue has now reached the level he needs.
Well, that's right, Jim. A threshold has been crossed in the Senate, where there are now 41 Senate Democrats who have come out in support of the deal. And this is sort of a magic number, because this number, at least in theory, we're not sure how this is all going to play out yet, but this is the number that would be needed to block a vote in the Senate. So the House and the Senate are just back from their recess, and each chamber is expected to vote this week on a resolution of disapproval of the Iran nuclear vote. And the House will almost certainly vote on it on Friday, and with a large Republican majority will virtually certainly pass that measure of disapproval. But now in the Senate, the critical number, the 41 votes of Senate Democrats, has been reached to block a vote. Although we had the Senate Majority Leader, Republican Mitch McConnell, coming out saying we need to have a straightforward up or down vote. We need to let senators vote their conscience on this, and Democrats should not try to use procedural maneuvering to block a vote. So it's not quite clear how this is all going to play out yet.
So what we know at this point is we've had individual senators come out and say, yes, they will support the deal, and we've counted them, and that has reached now 41. So should they vote, we would expect that this would be a victory for the president, and the Iran nuclear deal would, in effect, be in force.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I think what we could safely say for sure now is that there are veto-proof majorities in both chambers, should this go to a veto. But what it looks like now, with three more Democratic senators coming out in support of the deal, is that the president may not even have to issue a veto, which, of course, he would much prefer. But like I said, as to how the senators actually vote, we're going to have to sort of wait and see how all this plays out. Right now, we have no Republicans supporting the deal in either the House or the Senate. So it looks like it's going to be a very partisan, you know, straight down along party lines, people who are supporting or opposing. Although, I should point out, we have a few important Democrats who are also opposing the deal.
Well, it is politics, and it is Washington, and as they say, anything can happen.
That's right. That's right, Jim.
We'll be looking forward to seeing how this eventually plays out, but at least it looks like right now a victory for the president on the Iran nuclear deal. Cindy Sain covers Congress for us. Cindy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jim.
The U.S. and its allies have long suspected that Iran was using that program to build nuclear weapons. It's a charge Tehran denies. Obama pushed lawmakers hard to support the Iran deal and had already secured enough votes to prevent opponents from blocking it. But now, as we've heard, congressional opponents will not have the chance to force the president to wield his veto power. And while the debate has given critics a further chance to voice their complaints about the agreement, there are many voicing their thoughts through comments on social media. Charlie Hansler has been reading them, and he joins us in Studio 22 with some of the latest comments on Twitter.
So the most popular hashtag on Twitter dealing with this topic is hashtag Iran deal. According to the social media analytics website Topsy.com, Over 4,000 tweets with that hashtag have been tweeted out in the past 2 hours alone. Since the Iran deal will not be threatened by a veto in the U.S. Senate, there's been sentiment on Twitter that is both positive and negative regarding this deal. On the positive side, President Obama tweeted out from his Twitter handle, @BarackObama, that, quote, "The hashtag Iran deal has overwhelming support among leading scientists and non-proliferation experts." This tweet included a corresponding graphic displaying the alleged support experts had been given for the deal. On the negative side, meanwhile, Republican presidential contender Donald Trump tweeted from his Twitter handle, @RealDonaldTrump, quote, "Tomorrow in D.C., 1 p.m., West Front Lawn of the Capitol, not even believable we would do this deal with Iran. Trump and other opponents of the deal will join together in a protest tomorrow." Listeners can simply search hashtag Iran deal on Twitter, and they can likewise find contrasting views on the Iranian nuclear deal.
Thanks, Charlie. Charlie Hansler follows social media trends for International Edition, and you may follow him on Twitter @CharlieHansler. We're also on Twitter @VOA_IE. This is VOA.
If you doubt the speed at which the world is changing, just take a look at the digital media. In the last 20 years, the introduction of mobile and internet technology has spawned breathtaking advances in the sharing of information and commerce. Today, an estimated 1/4 of the Earth's population uses the services of the internet. 2/3 of us now own a mobile phone. But these advances into the digital age have been met with problems. Problems like state censorship, hackers, and identity theft, to name just a few. The Voice of America wants to know how the digital world has transformed your life. Or have they? We'd like you to tell us your story by writing or sending videos to our website, Twitter, or Facebook page. Find out more by visiting us at our webpage at voanews.com and then click on Digital Frontier. Tell your story and share it with the world through VOA's Digital Frontier.
This is VOA's International Edition. Politics never seems to disappoint when it comes to unexpected twists and turns among those seeking or in office. It's true today in Guatemala, where a comedic actor and political novice is now leading following Sunday's first round election to replace former President Otto Perez Molina, caught up in a massive corruption scandal that forced his resignation last week, followed by his arrest. Jimmy Morales, who ran on an anti-corruption campaign, captured nearly 24% of the vote compared to his two rivals, businessman Manuel Baldazan and former First Lady Sandra Torres, each getting about 19% of the vote. Rice University Latin American expert Mark Jones told VOA's Victor Beatty that the rise of Morales was a recent phenomenon, and until the bribery scandal erupted, businessman Baldazan was favored to win.
With growing concerns about corruption in Guatemala, which has resulted in previously the resignation of the vice president and most recently the resignation and the arrest of President Otto Perez Molina, the issue of corruption has skyrocketed to become the major issue among Guatemalan voters. And since Baldassarre is widely seen as part of the old corrupt machine, his support plummeted. And Morales, he's an unknown in politics. He's very well known as a comedian. But since he's untouched by political corruption, he became a lightning rod for all of the support for people throughout the country who wanted to send a message against the corrupt old political system. And since he was the leading candidate who was not associated with the old way of doing politics, he received a decent amount of support, close to 1/4 of the vote. As he heads into the runoff, he'll be facing Sandra Torres, whose wife divorced in part for political reasons from Alvaro Colom, who was the president before Perez Molina. Morales is likely to be favored simply because Torres also is linked to the old-style politics and also will be opposed by many people in Baldassarre's party, Leader, which remains a very strong and influential force throughout the country. So they're likely to be working for Morales, in part because I think they believe that they would likely have more influence under a Morales government than under a Torres government.
Isn't it interesting that Italy elected a former comedian? Now we have the same thing in Guatemala, and you have a strong anti-establishment move in the Republican Party here in the U.S.
it speaks to the desire among many voters throughout the world for change. And one advantage that actors or people that are TV personalities have is they come in with a high level of name recognition, which is a plus in politics, but they don't have the minus of being associated with all the negatives that are people often associate with the political system. And particularly in cases like Guatemala, where there is so much corruption, you know, up to the point where the vice president and president are widely viewed to be involved in a corruption ring related to import taxes and bribes paid for by companies to either not pay their import taxes or to pay lower than the legal amount.
Corruption is a major issue worldwide. Can Guatemala get a hold of its problem?
Unfortunately, while the Morales candidacy may be seen as a breath of fresh air, assuming he's elected and he arrives in office in January, he isn't very well prepared to actually govern. And that's one underlying problem that many non-political candidates often experience, in that while they have high levels of popularity due to success in sports or entertainment, they often have very little experience actually in terms of governance. And once they arrive in office, it becomes very difficult to govern. And that's particularly the case in Guatemala, which has a very fragmented party system, which has high levels of corruption, as well as an elite that's going to resist any effort to change the status quo.
Jones says although Morales will likely win the October 25th runoff, the irony is that he'll likely be unable to enact any of his program given his lack of political experience, little support in Congress, and also the resistance of the elite to raising taxes. Well, from politics to the cultural phenomenon of Star Wars, which has been with us and growing since the original movie came out in 1977. It may be a story from a galaxy far, far away, but it's right here at VOA on this week's hashtag VOA program. With me is Eli Ralston, who's been looking at a new and huge Star Wars event.
Well, today on hashtag VOA, we focused on Star Wars, but kind of a smaller aspect of Star Wars, which was Force Friday, which happened actually this past Friday, where it was the release of all the kind of themed merchandise for the new Star Wars film. So all the new action figures, all the Lego sets, pop vinyls, little miniature figures, all of that stuff came out on one day. And they, with Disney's money behind it, they did this big kind of midnight release at Disney stores and retail stores, and really just kind of a lot of people actually got in line at midnight to snatch these toys, and they were sold out within hours. So we talked about not only that on the show, but we also talked about, you know, the financials of it, how that's going to help both Disney and Hasbro stock. Also, how will it help the film? Will it help box office numbers for the film? Is this too early to start the hype for it, or is this kind of the perfect lead up to the film?
Mm-hmm. Well, Force Friday, it sounds like may the economic force be with you, especially with Disney money behind it. That is a huge boon for the Star Wars franchise.
Oh, yes, because before Disney spent $4 billion on the whole Star Wars franchise, it was kind of a little fading a little bit because, like, you know, there were talks of a new movie, but You really weren't gonna see a new Star Wars film anytime soon. You know, there's some TV series, some canceled video games that were maybe in the works, but it's really starting to really kind of falter and kind of dissipate a little bit. But then Disney picks it up and immediately, like, new video games, new books, comic books, you know, a movie every single year. I mean, they just really took it and just are throwing it everywhere now. They're using kind of the Marvel system of doing this, where if you have Marvel and the Marvel Studios films. Where, you know, if you have all of these pieces that kind of fit into a larger whole, people feel like they're a part of a larger story instead of just seeing one movie or reading one comic book or playing one game. You feel like you're a part of something bigger.
That really is a long, far cry in a galaxy far, far away from the original movie.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Some of these action figures that you were talking about, people snatching up. But what's so unique about these as opposed to previous editions of Star Wars figures we've seen?
Well, one thing is there are still the iterations where, you know, you have the Black Series, which are the figures of some of the new characters, which are Kylo Ren and Rey and Finn. You get to see these new characters that have never been in Star Wars before. And also anything BB-8, which is the new little droid that's like two balls, looks almost like a little snowman. Anything that's BB-8 just flies off the shelves because he's kind of like the RTD2 for this generation. I mean, there's that little, the new Sphero BB-8 where you control with your – it's an app on your phone, mm-hmm. and you can control it, and it rolls around the floor. Pretty much anything BB-8 just was gone automatically. But, you know, there are still iterations of the old characters. There are still C-3PO action figures. There are still Chewbacca ones, mm-hmm. R2-D2 mm-hmm. ones. They even came out with new, like, Darth Vader ones.
Updated.
Yeah, just update a little bit. It's – they're being very smart with their strategy where they are using the old characters of, you know, Han Solo and Leia and Luke Skywalker, and they're bringing them in with these new characters to try and get both generations to be, pretty much all generations, to be very excited about this.
Wow, it is exciting. And a lot of visuals to go with this story. Be sure and check out hashtag VOA at our website and all over social media. And Eli Ralston, may the force be with you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that afflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
It's out. Dutch-born pop singer Natalie LaRose has released her second single, Around the World, where she teams up with superstar Fetty Wap. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA's Larry London about the single and about Natalie LaRose's career.
You might know her from her work with Flo Rida. Maybe you've seen her open for Fifth Harmony this summer. But Natalie LaRose is making her own mark in the music biz with her second single, Around the World. Larry, this single reminded me a lot of some of the stuff that Janet Jackson has done in the past.
That's true, very true. And Janet happens to be out with a new album and tour herself. But yes, Natalie LaRose, beautiful young lady. She's one of MTV's artists to watch. I had a chance to speak to her. She's a tall girl. She studied dance when she was young and growing up, and that was kind of the direction she started off on, but now she's kind of turned that into a music career, and during her concerts, she still does a lot of dancing. But she told me that growing up in Amsterdam, there just wasn't a demand for the kind of music she's known for performing, which is today's R&B, hip-hop, groove style.
And she moved to Los Angeles back in 2008. But it was an encounter with Flo Rida at the ESPYs that really set the world on fire.
She walked up to him and said, "My name's Natalie LaRose, and we have to work together." And believe it or not, he said, "Okay." And he took her on the road as a backup singer. And then, too long, she teamed up with Jeremih on Somebody, which was a big hit for her this past year. And now she's coming out with the next single.
If I was your girl, if I was your girl, I'd give it to you.
And this single features Fetty Wap, who seems to be dominating the Billboard Hot 100. He's got like 3 songs in the top 20.
Trap Queen made him famous this past year, although he does have quite a few other songs. He's collaborating with a lot of other artists, but Natalie LaRose is very excited about the new collaboration with Fetty Wap, and it's called Around the World.
Now, the video for this, I know this is a radio show, but
close your eyes and imagine.
The video for this is kind of a setup like they're in some Caribbean bar because her parents are from Suriname, mm-hmm. Which is in the, I guess it was called the Dutch West Indies or something.
Right.
But they're in this kind of bar and some guy drops his passport, you know, because he wants to kind of talk to her or whatever. And then the dance numbers is what really reminded me of Janet Jackson. Mm-hmm. I mean, really tight choreography, really snappy, you know, popping and locking, but also singing at the same time. And then, of course, Fetty Wap comes in with the rap. So,
yeah. And she's absolutely beautiful, too. And she's her early days was on stage doing theater production. She recalled to me a story of starring in one of the lead roles in High School Musical back at home in Amsterdam. which is kind of interesting.
If you have any comments about Natalie LaRose or her new single, Around the World, you can send them to Larry on Twitter. He is at @VOA_music. You can also listen for Larry's program, Border Crossings. That's on our website, voanews.com.
You've been listening to International Edition. We're always at voanews.com. That's our website. That's where we live. That's where we come to you. We're also on social media as well. Facebook, Twitter, follow us, VOA_IE. Many of you we know listen to us through iTunes. Thanks so much for downloading our program. And you can always write to us, voaasia@voanews.com. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Arctic is at the leading edge of climate change, and it is warming faster than any other region on Earth, twice the rate of the global average. Human activity is disrupting the climate in many ways faster than we previously thought. The science is stark. It is sharpening. It proves that this once distant threat is now very much in the present, said President Barack Obama at the Glacier Conference in Anchorage, Alaska.
Climate change is already disrupting our agriculture and ecosystems. Our water and food supplies, our energy, our infrastructure, human health, human safety, now, today. And climate change is a trend that affects all trends. Economic trends, security trends, everything will be impacted. And it becomes more dramatic with each passing year.
The United States recognizes its role in creating this problem, said President Obama. We may not be able to reverse the damage, but we have the scientific imagination and technological innovation to avoid irreparable harm. Since 2009, the United States has made tremendous investments in clean energy, energy efficiency, and reduction of carbon emissions from vehicles and buildings. And in August, President Obama set a nationwide standard to end the limitless dumping of carbon pollution from power plants, the most important step the United States has ever taken on climate change. We are proving that there doesn't have to be a conflict between a sound environment and strong economic growth. But we're not moving fast enough. None of the nations represented here are moving fast enough, said President Obama. This sense of urgency is driving the international community to reach an agreement at the United Nations Climate Change Conference, which will take place in Paris, France, later this year. We know that human activity is changing the climate. That is beyond dispute. We can have a legitimate debate about how we are going to address this problem. We cannot deny the science. We also know the devastating consequences if the current trend lines continue. That is not deniable, said President Obama. On this issue of all issues, there is such a thing as being too late. That moment is almost upon us.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.